This is called I'll Be Chillin'.
You Be Illin'.
Because I'm chilling. I know there was an illin'. They're illing in there somewhere. But anything you want to hear from them, two more hours to go. Send a request. Plazaport text line at 410-583-1057. Bob Hitty, Nolan McGraw. Ryan Ripken is now joining us. We're gonna rip it with him. How you doing?
Oh, you're doing great. I'll be honest. A little exhausted.
Are you illing?
Am I illing?
Yeah. You be illing or chilling?
Sure. Right, you know, how about
that song came out before you were born? Nolan, too, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I think I'm older than Nolan, if I'm not mistaken.
Really? No, I'm kidding.
That came out before, 87,
yeah. Right? Back when we did the rapping in AB rhyme schemes, the cat wears the hat, sits on the mat.
Look at you on this Friday. But in general, rhymes. A little exhausted, though, Bob, because, you know, not only was Major League Baseball busy, but I did my show, The Ryan Ripken Show, yesterday. Said, you know what, we'll go live for a few hours. Ended up doing a 5-hour just on the deadline. And besides the Minnesota Twins, who sold the house, the Orioles were close up there, Bob, making all types of moves. So, yeah, a lot to talk about in the baseball
world. Yeah, we're getting mixed results from the fans in regards to Elias Sucks, what he did yesterday. And he did create the mess that put them in a situation where they're in last place and chasing 7.5 out of the wild card. Question is that I've had all along, can he really not rebuild, retool, reset, reload, whatever it is? Because there is a core that is in place. Speaking of that core, a lot of them in today's starting lineup. 220, Orioles taking on the Cubs. Jackson Holliday, Cade Horton, righty on the hill for Chicago. Jackson Holliday leading off second base. Jordan Westberg's at third base. Gunnar Henderson, shortstop. Adley cleaning up. 5 ribbies since his return. Muscles O'Neill has been on fire. He's in right field. Moo Man, a lot of Ks. He's in left field. Kobe Mayo, hey, get to know him. He's going to be your everyday first baseman, at least through the series against Chicago, because Mountcastle won't be back till next week. Dylan Carlson, center field. And Jeremiah Jackson is the DH. Today. So that's your lineup for Manzo taking on the Cubs. Then you go to Philadelphia. Orioles, that tough loss to wrap up the Toronto series. Then Mike Elias breaks up the band. So Ryan Ripken, I'll just go ahead and let you rip, and then we'll agree or disagree.
Okay, so let's rip. First off, you know, it was feeling better in Baltimore because you were taking care of business versus the Jays, and heck, you were a bad inning away from winning, or not only, you know, you won the series, but sweeping the AL East leading Blue Jays, you know, and you saw the offense. The things seemed to get together, but the Orioles made the decision, Bob, to sell off. And look, for a lot of different reasons, you know, I understand fans are disappointed. And maybe this is a good context here, because this isn't just Baltimore with the Orioles, because where they were, the Orioles had to make moves, and I can get into all of those throughout the 2 hours that we're here, but I listened to Bob Melvin of the San Francisco Giants, Bob, and Bob Melvin in the press conference, I think it was maybe 2 days ago now, he said, you know, we put the front office in a tough position on our side because we weren't winning games, and players on the Giants said, yep, we don't blame Buster Posey, who's their president and operations out there in San Francisco, because the Giants, who bought Devers earlier in the year, now sold off some key pieces as they move towards the rest of the season. So the example here in Baltimore, they made the choice that Cedric Mullins and Ryan O'Hearn were not going to be their priorities, at least going into the offseason. Expiring contracts, teams are going to be aggressive to get them, and they were. So a lot to dive in. The one piece, though, I think people want to know about is Ramon Laureano. We can talk about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. That lineup that you just read, and you mentioned Kobe Mayo, the blessing of this whole situation is that you must play your young guys moving forward the rest of the way. If you conceded, which this was the concession, the young guys like Kobe Mayo and whoever else is going to be a part of this, whoever relievers you call up, You need to know what you have, because the game plan into this offseason 2026, Bob, has to be so precise. You have to know exactly what you're doing the moment the season ends, and there can be no hesitation, because this team is still good enough with their core to go out and compete next year. No ands, ifs, or buts about it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, I've been saying it, so I can't back down now like Tom Petty won't back down. But before we get to whether Elias sucks or not, and you know, a lot of people are on the, yeah, he does train for sure. And we're going to hear from Mike Elias, met with the media a couple hours ago. But the fans surprised that some of the people who were traded, have you not been paying attention? These outside of Baker, who was the first one to go, I was like, okay, where'd that come from? And maybe Arias. Every other player, and once Laureano started to heat up, and Morton the same, and with the bullpen needs with Kittredge and O'Hearn and Mullins, as you mentioned, you knew they were gone. And if Eflin was healthy, he'd have been gone yesterday, yep, too. That's what flummoxed me. It's like, why is everyone shocked at these guys getting traded? What did you think, you were getting Ronald Acuna Jr. back in, yeah, a trade, or some sort of stud Julio Rodriguez? That wasn't reality. Well, why didn't he get a major league ready guy? We got ends.
Hey, you
make
know,
ends meet.
I actually saw Dietrich Enns in person. He was on that 2021 Durham Bulls team, AAA of the Rays, that absolutely just lit up the Norfolk Tides. That, you know what? So in my eyes, he did very well, but he's going to get an opportunity there, right? That's on the small front. But here's the thing, Bob, and I would love if anyone, maybe call-ins later, if people are calling in.
Yeah, get in here. 410-583-1057.
I would love to answer and talk about this, because one of the things when I did the show yesterday, where let's talk about why people were upset with saying Cedric and Ryan O'Hearn, because the business side is you take the value, especially if their price tag might be too much in the offseason, and you got to address other needs. And you have players in your organization that you have to prioritize. And actually this time, prioritize. They need to play. Like Sam Basayo, to me, should be up in the next month. I expect him to be up in the next month. Kobe Mayo needs to play now with Ryan O'Hearn gone, more regardless of Mountie returning soon.
Sure.
Maybe Dylan Beavers, now that he's here, he's earned the right to be called up to see what he can do at some point in time, whatever it may be. But this is why fans, Bob, felt the way they did with guys like Cedric Mullins and Ryan O'Hearn, but mainly Cedric. You know, when you're a fan of a team, what do you want, right? You know, it's rhetorical. I'm going to answer it for you. What you want is you want to experience great moments. Now, most of that is around winning, right? Because aren't a lot of great moments around your team winning the division, winning playoff games, and winning a World Series, which fans haven't experienced in 42 years and lifetimes. I haven't seen it yet. But the other part is fans experience the great moments that players create for them. So Cedric Mullins, in this case, longest tenured guy with the team, circus catch, last one in Baltimore, was one of his best catches of his career.
Yeah.
And you come to know and love these guys because they can kind of embody you. I thought that Cedric embodied Baltimore. Gritty, showed up every day. And even when people doubted him and he had struggles, Bob, he didn't waver. He went out and showed up, kept going back to work, and put his head down and work through the failures. And I think that's why fans, it hurts, because you haven't had a guy that has stayed here, whether you're saying it's loyalty from the players or loyalty from the organization. We don't see the guy stay here for career-long moments anymore. So it hurts fans when you don't have the great moments that you're winning, and then you lose guys that really contributed to you being a fan of the team. And that's why Cedric Mullins and Ryan O'Hearn, who were embraced by the team, definitely is hurting that they're going somewhere else, but it was the right business move to do.
We'll come back, take your phone calls. 410-583-1057 is how you join us. Bob Hating, Ryan Ripken, Nolan McGraw. We're ripping it with Ryan. Orioles in Chicago, taking on Cubs. 221st pitch. Gave you the lineup, give it to you again. Gabe Lax, USA Today, grades the trades. And Ryan mentioned the Twins. I think Harmon Killebrew and Tony Oliva got dealt yesterday as well. Remember that 13-game winning streak of theirs? Guess everybody forgot about it all of a sudden. But the Yankees have proved themselves, and the Padres are in it to win it. I'm kind of rooting for them now. USA Today, grades, trades, but let's get out to the phone for Ripping It with Ryan, Bob Haney, Ryan Ripken, Nolan McGraw. Let's start it off, Ellicott City with Joe. Joe, thanks for holding. What's up?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Going all right.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll just get to 2 points. One, the trades. I mean, I think I give a B to an A. I mean, the trades had to be done. They weren't going to be on our team next year. I mean, a few players were controllable, but most of them weren't. So why not get some value out of it? That's fine. As to Eliasa, man, here's my, like, critique about him and why I think that he should be on the hot seat next year is that, I mean, if you look at our young core players, like, outside of Holiday, most of them have not gotten better. They've gotten worse, which to me, like, I need to see. Like, if you look at Adley's numbers, they've gotten worse. Like, Gunner, his power's down. Colton Cowser's striking out at a high rate and, like, kind of the same guy. Like, you know, if we want to win this core group of players, you got to see them improve. Even like Kjærstad, like he just got demoted back to, you know, the minor leagues. I need to see improvement. And that to me falls on the GM, putting pieces around them to have these players get better, not worse. And the one thing I'll leave it to this, like, I haven't heard of his press conference yet, but if it sounds similar to like, trust the process, like the Sixers back in the day, well, the process never ends. And like, I'm not going to keep, you're buying into that. I need to see progression, and I'm just not seeing it right now.
So. Hey, Joe, good call. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And so far in the Mike Elias press conference, and one of the quotes I've seen, and I even saw Jacob Calvin Meyer tweeted out there, where Elias was continuing to apologize to Orioles fans, saying, "I am so sorry for how this year went." And I didn't hear the process. I have to listen to the entirety of everything, but I haven't heard the process part. I think where people do worry, though, Joe, to your point, is this core going to be enough to win in the postseason? Because they haven't done it yet. I believe the talent's still there. When your team doesn't do well, that causes problems. We talked about it. You get in a bad headspace. When the development isn't happening at the rate that you want, that can influence how players go out in the field and perform, you know? And confidence is a big thing. You mentioned Heston Kjærstad. I don't think that Heston is as bad as a hitter that people might perceive him to be. I think he is a big league hitter with a lot of upside. But you saw what happened with Kyle Stowers last year, a couple years ago, lost confidence, even when he had a little success in the big leagues. And his numbers when he went down to the minors weren't great. Because you know what? He's figuring out, what do I have to do? You know, right, Bob? Like, what do I have to do to break through? And I went on a little rant before here, which off air, and I'll talk about it later on. My biggest issue with what's happened with the Orioles is not the moves that they've made or not made. It's how they've played the game. Philosophy-wise, the Orioles in 24, when they were just steamrolling everybody, the talent was so good. Your talent was good. You had Corbin Burnes. Kyle Bradish was back. Grayson was there. And then Gunner was playing at his level. Adley was playing well, and et cetera, right? When you have less of a room for error, and this Orioles team had less room for error this year, you know what helps your team out? Playing the game more effectively. Playing the game more fundamentally. And the errors that show up in the box score are great, or like that can give the stats to, well, those are issues. It's the ones that don't show up in the stat sheet where you're not turning double plays, you're making base running mistakes, you're missing cutoff men, and things snowball. So I hear you, Joe, but the one thing at least I want Mike Elias to get credit for, the Orioles did have 3 straight winning seasons. But now, with this face of adversity, how do you bounce back and how do you get this organization back on track?
And by the way, it needs to hire a manager, too.
And that's a huge part of this equation.
This offseason. Let's go to Mitchell in Baltimore. Mitchell, thanks for holding your Ripping It with Ryan here on the Fan.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, I'm really actually glad for Mullins and O'Hearn and Urias. I'm glad they're getting a chance to be in the playoffs this year. Mullins, I mean, if we really love him and we really need him, we could re-sign him next year. So I hope they all have great postseasons and get a taste. In the meantime, we got all these prospects, and do we have, you know, the structure, the front office, the training, you know, the instructors to make these kids better players, actual major leaguers. That's the biggest thing. That's my biggest fear going forward. We've got all this young talent. What are we going to do with it? You know, we don't have a great this front office does not have a good record of developing players. So that's the big question.
All right, Mitchell, thanks for the call. And, you know, player development, you know, sometimes, Ryan, and you know, you play professional baseball yourself, you're just good enough that you overcome and adapt and do what you have to do. I think the bigger concern, too, could be, to Mitchell's point, the development of pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
And injuries. I mean, that's kind of a real thing now. Braxton Bragg, for instance,
yeah,
came out of nowhere, got Tommy John surgery. We won't be seeing him for a while. Mike Elias did say that elbow surgery is on the table again for Grayson Rodriguez. We can get into that. Why just not do it 5 months ago? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But, you know, some genuine concerns, I guess, with Mike Elias and the development of the team and other issues here.
So I want to clarify this, at least. And for all the parts where people want to look at the failures or the struggles of Mike Elias, give the credit of what they have done. And that's, they have brought in players and helped this team get to a successful level. We cannot diminish that. Three straight years of making the playoffs. Gunnar Henderson is your superstar shortstop. His down year is what's happening right now, and it's still a really solid year despite everything else. Jackson Holliday looks like he's going to be a star. Jordan Westberg is an all-star, right? So I don't want to go down this rabbit hole of saying they can't develop everyone. The Orioles, to me, can identify talent and get a lot of talent out of that said player, as well as anyone, in my opinion. But the problem, actually, where it stems from me is, what do you do when they get to the higher levels of minor league ball, and how do you get them to get to the big leagues to be that player you hope them to be? Does that make sense?
Sure.
I think that's where I'm seeing it more is, we've seen these pitchers have success in the minors, not have success that they've gotten to the big leagues. We've seen hitters in the minors do well, but then I'd argue they're not getting the fair shake to go out there and play every day, and they've never experienced that. They play every day in the minor leagues. So I think it's more of, not that the Orioles can identify talent and get a lot of talent out of the guys, but it's, at the end of the day, how does that talent transfer over into being big league parts of your team? Because that's what you need it to be at the end of the day.
When we come back, Gabe Lax, USA Today, he'll grade the Orioles and the Padres, the trades that went down yesterday, winners, losers at the trade deadline. We got Ripping It with Ryan rolling on here. If you're on the phones, Andre, Kevin, we'll get you later on in the hour. Rich Dubroff, BaltimoreBaseball.com. He'll be joining us 1:30. Hey, the Orioles do play today at 2:20. And we kind of know the guys that are in the lineup. Jeremiah Jackson, welcome to the party. So on the Window Nation guest hotline, USA Today, let's welcome back to the show our friend Gabe Lax. Gabe, good afternoon. How are you feeling today?
Much better than yesterday. A little more energetic. The whirlwind is behind us. So I guess we can kind of inspect the landscape now, such as it is.
All right. As the whirlwind is behind us and the, carnage, if you want to call it that, for the Orioles, I mean, they traded away a lot of familiar names, a lot of expiring contracts, replenished, I guess, to some level, the farm system. How would you rate the job that Mike Elias did yesterday, Gabe, a guy who's taken a lot of heat around these parts over the last few months, as you would expect?
Well, pretty solid. I mean, you know, you hate to do this kind of stuff. Nobody likes it unless you're a real, you know, prospect head. And I think the Orioles and Orioles fans are a little tired of that, understandably. So he got back some decent value guys within the top 30 of their organizations, even a little higher than that. Of course, that's all relative based on the farm system. Sometimes that's hard to do. This is it's not easy to sell. Everybody's going to wait you out and see what they can get, you know, what little they can get, you know, at 5.58 or have to give up, you know. So he appeared to get some guys, the pitching prospect, Boston Bateman, they call him Sasquatch, a very interesting guy to watch in the future, along with just a ton of depth that's going to fill that out. The one thing that really struck me is we all knew that the winner was going to be huge, that big for Elias, big for the team, big for this this window. And let's be honest, it is a window, as much as GMs hate to say this, because you got a couple guys, you know, halfway getting halfway through to, you know, the magical six-year mark. So what he's left himself with is, and this is kind of back of the napkin math, roughly eight guys that he's going to need to find in the off season, which is a lot. You know, sometimes you go into the off season, your roster is set. You got 21 guys, say, accounted for, a couple prospects, you know, ready to roll, what have you. There's a lot of holes to fill. And that's kind of the byproduct of, you know, the Ramon Urias trade. You know, obviously Baker was the one that started this whole thing. You know, and Laureano might have been a nice piece for next year. Well, they got a lot more back because they dealt those guys. But it's suddenly you need a bench, you need a bullpen, you need a rotation. So it's a lot of heavy lifting for Elias, and he's going to have to, you know, dip into pretty much all three buckets next year, which is to say, going to need some big-time free agent help, going to need some veteran, you know, stopgap kind of things, maybe some waiver claims, and maybe some, you know, some guys ready to come up from the farm, especially as it regards bullpen pieces. So it's just going to be a massive offseason, and I think the fur is only going to continue to start flying because he's left himself a lot of 40-man roster spots open. So we're going to maybe go back a little bit to what the Orioles might remember as the bad old days, circa 1920, 21, when the end of the 40-man roster was a revolving door. Sometimes you get a Ramon Urias in that revolving door, but not that it's aesthetically pretty to watch in real time. So weird times ahead and busy times ahead. That's kind of my biggest takeaway from all this.
Yeah, I was just talking to Bob earlier last segment about, you know, the Orioles making all these moves and figuring out what they have in-house here, including their big league team going into this offseason, is going to be so important because you have to be on it from the jump. And by the way, now for the prospects, for everyone out there, the Orioles have eight pitchers in the top 12 prospects, according, you know, to MLB.com and the prospect list. So I guess my question then goes around to this part of it, and I'm with you. The Orioles weren't trying to move Ramon Laureano, but the value was there. Now, in your mind, though, with this plethora of talent, you know, could you see a place here where there wasn't a lot of controllable pitchers moved at this deadline? Could this be a way that the Orioles could use some of these prospects to possibly go and make another push here come the winter?
Oh, certainly. You know, it's I guess the one thing that might hold that back from, you know, from actuality is the fact that a lot of these guys are pretty far from the major league. So it's not like they got double A guys ready to, ready to jump in for somebody else. There's guys that need a little bit more of a track record. Maybe I think it'd be more realistic for the guys they got yesterday to be dealt at next year's trade deadline. If, you know, by the grace of the offseason, they're in playoff position at that point. But it definitely helps to lengthen the system. And it is pretty remarkable that suddenly they do have pitching prospects. Because this is kind of, you know, this is kind of the road they've chosen, which is don't draft pitchers. Don't, at least right now, spend big money on you know, nine-figure salaries for veterans. It's, you know, work that one-year $12 to $15 million trough. And then make trades for guys you like in other systems, and that you know, that obviously worked out okay with Cade Povich and Chase McDermott. Yesterday, the last few days' crop looks pretty encouraging that way. And you're right; they're all kind of you know, poking in that top 10. So, you know, it's that's really where they got caught slipping the last couple of years, was just pitching injuries hit, and there was nothing there to really backfill. So, whether those guys are trade bait or whether they're ready to knock on the door in a year or 2 years, it was essential that they kind of buff out their pitching depth. And that's probably the most important piece of the guys they got back, for sure.
Yeah. The organizations lack that depth and lack the options if teams want to make move and they want some of those pitching prospects that they could, you know, use as assets in the future. But speaking of an asset that wasn't moved because he got injured, but I'm curious now because Felix Bautista, you know, it was going to be a long shot, but was it really going to be a long shot here after seeing all the closers that got moved and the value? Mason Miller is the one that ends up going to the Padres, which they gave up. We thought the Orioles got a big package back. The Athletics got the number three overall prospect in all of baseball. Do you think in this case, was there anything that surprised you, I guess I should say, with how the trade deadline went, with somehow the arms were moved or whatnot? Because I feel like this year, unlike any other year, there was a lot more emphasis on closers and teams willing to buy and kind of, you know, be the aggressor here to try to go for it.
Yeah, that was definitely a surprise. Obviously, the Miller trade was just a bolt out of nowhere, you know, that nobody really expected. And the thing that I found interesting about that and about other situations was teams setting up their bullpen not just for this year, but for future years. You know, obviously, Mason Miller controlled for another 4 years after this. So the, you know, and the odds of A.J. Preller holding on to him for all four of those years seems pretty slim. But, you know, they could certainly flip him really soon. But the, you know, the Yankees, David Bednar, one more year of control. Camilo Duvall, two more years of control. Jake Bird, three more years of control, all after this year. So it's, you know, that was interesting to me because, and it's, you know, they are losing Devin Williams and Luke Weaver potentially, but, you know, the Yankees really put a priority on controllable relief pitchers, which is good and bad. Good because, hey, great, you get to keep them. Bad because there's nothing more volatile than relief pitcher performance. So, and that's kind of what I liked about the Baker trade going back a couple of weeks. You get what ends up being a pretty good prep outfield prospect for, you know, a guy at the very height of his trade value. So kind of surprised at the relievers, very surprised that the Yankees and Cubs, to name two, were not able to get a real good starting pitcher in there. Both of them really need that if they're going to be serious contenders. And I wonder how serious the Yankees think things are, you know, just because it was a weird and kind of underwhelming trade deadline for them by their standards. The Cubs have a pretty much a World Series ready team. They've got Michael Tucker guaranteed for just two more months. I'm a little surprised that their best starting pitcher brought in was Michael Soroka, who's kind of a 4 or 5 inning guy at best. And they may really feel that down the stretch, and they're in a tooth and nail battle with the Brewers. So, that for the most part surprised me, but also, you know, this is kind of the modern trade deadline too. There's so many teams that fancy themselves as contenders. And, you know, there's just not much available for teams looking to buy. And consider this, too. This was the trade deadline with the Giants and the Diamondbacks falling out of the race and pivoting to a seller's stance. So it could have been even worse. But this is kind of the new reality with 500 at the deadline putting you in a chance to really go after it. So, it's best to do your work in the winter, which takes us back to Elias again, with a lot of work ahead in the coming months for sure.
Gabe Lax, USA Today. Gabe, as always, appreciate the time. Enjoy your rest of your weekend. Maybe take a couple minutes of breather here.
Happy August to everybody.
Yeah, you got it. August 1st, everyone. Come back, take your phone call. Sports at 583-1057. Mike Elias met with the media. Gave us a Grayson Rodriguez update. Not good. Not good at all. Buy or sell. Rich Dubroff's going to be joining us. And Mike Elias said some things about, you know, he apologized to the team. Does he owe you an apology? A lot of people think, yeah, and a pink slip, maybe. Driven here with Ryan, Bob Hayden, Nolan McGraw, Ryan Ripken. Let's get out to the phones. Andre Glenn Burney. Andre, thanks for holding. What's up?
Hey, Bob. How you doing, Ryan?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing much better now than I was yesterday. I was kind of bummed about Cedric being traded. And I understand the things that you said. But the only problem I have, like I said, I've been a longtime Oriole fan since the 60s. And one thing about the Orioles in the past, they cared about community. They cared about they were, they cared about chemistry, what a player brought more than just stats to a team. Cedric meant more than just what he was putting up stats-wise, you know, his character and everything. And also, as an African-American, you know, I just have a problem with the Orioles lately, what they look like as a team. They don't, you know, a lot of the folks that was traded was, you know, Cedric and, you know, Hispanic players, and the thing about it, and I had no problem with some of the trades, but some of the stuff is more than just analytics. It's about what a person brings to the table personality wise and other things that brings the chemistry. That's why your dad and Eddie Murray and all the rest of them were so successful, because it was a chemistry. It was more than just stats, but it was chemistry there. But this team, there's something about that where they did too much by the analytical stuff, and it just irritates me. And I just have that's my problem. And, you know, I don't dislike Mike Elias. I want him to succeed, but the thing about it is I just don't agree with some of the moves. All of them, you know, some of them were good, but not all of them.
Hey, Andre, thanks for the call. We had a, speaking of Cedric or O'Hearn for that matter, expiring contract dudes, would there be an inclination to come back if Mike Elias was interested in reuniting? And by the way, look at this, too, for all of the guys that were traded. They gained a few games in the standings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Padres, Mets, I'm pretty sure, Cubs, they're going to wind up in the postseason. But depending on the if Beavers comes up, can he get it done? Bradfield's development down on the farm. Honeycutt seems to be a ways away. But if the Orioles addressed a possible reunion, would Cedric be open to that sort of thing?
I think every player always would be open if you leave on good terms to wherever it is, or you love where you were. But the reality is, you know, most cases guys don't. You know, I know that you can probably, for the ones that are listening, can go, well, this so-and-so was here. You know, one that pops up to me was Aroldis Chapman was traded away from the Yankees, I think, to the Cubs. Then he went back to the Yankees. But, okay, of all the trades, and there's trades every single year, where guys are in these situations, it does become on more of the unfavorable side that they return. And also, when you're looking at the construction of what your team is going to be, and if you have to pay other guys, you have to prioritize in this situation. Now, one thing I wanted to say to Andre's point about the connection with the players in the community, Bob, that matters. And there's the thing that I like to talk about with guys on teams. There are certain qualities and attributes that you cannot quantify with any data. You know, that's why when Adam Frazier was here a couple of years ago, and maybe the numbers weren't great, but if you talk to people in the clubhouse, how much they appreciated and learned from Adam Frazier as a person, as a player, it's Kyle Gibson, James McCann. Those impacts, because they're high character guys that were able to bring a group together. And I think what hurts fans is the two guys that they resonated the most with on this team, like as far as a connection, was Cedric and then Ryan O'Hearn. I think that both those guys talked about also how much they love Baltimore. And that goes a long way, Bob, in my opinion.
And Andre brought up community. Chris Davis was big in the community. Yep. Adam Jones, huge in the community. And when he left, it might not have been on the best of terms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was Dan Duquette was trying to trade him in 2018, right. But goes to Arizona, played in Japan, now back in the organization as a 1A, 1B with Mike Elias in the front office. Mike Bordick, by the way, was traded away and eventually came back to the Orioles, too.
Yeah, well, you know, and there's
25 years ago.
Hey, did Mike Mussina come back?
That's a negative.
In a free agency move there? Let's see who else was traded and didn't come back to Baltimore, right? There's a long list of it. But that is the hard thing nowadays in this game, is that the memories that you had growing up with these players on a team for so long, you just don't see it very often for many different reasons.
When we come back, give you the Orioles lineup and Chicago's as well. Birds and Cubs coming up at 2:20. Mike Elias met with the media, explains why the moves were made yesterday. How did they get themselves into this jam in the first place? And an update on Grayson Rodriguez. And it doesn't appear to be good news there with their top pitching guy.